Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, toughmantri.com, VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, RunCatalina.com, the Catalina Marathon, Eco Marathon, Half Marathon, and 10K coming up Saturday, November 18th. ATV Swim Spas, the official training vessel of six-time Ironman World Champion Dave Scott. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we just sent out 2,448 grants, totaling $3.7 million to keep challenged athletes in the game alive through sport. Check us out on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. A young man who is on a roll. He just took second at the Ironman 70.3 World Championships. His name is Ben Canute. Ben, how the heck you doing?
I'm doing great, Bob. How are you?
I am spectacular. So when I look at the race you just had, right, with you got Javier Gomez, won World Championships, won Xterra Championships. He's won 70.3 Worlds before. You take a flyer off the front. You're leading out of the swim. You get build up like a 4-minute lead on the bike. You don't seem to be intimidated by these big races, because we saw you do that at the Worlds in 2015 in Chicago. You look at these as an opportunity to just go for it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's just how I race, and I think if you were talking to Javier Gomez or some of these super runners, you'd be saying you're not really intimidated to go and lay it down in the first whatever 10K of the run. So for me, it was mostly just following a game plan. Me and my coach Jim Vance, we set up how we wanted to approach the swim, how we wanted to approach the bike and the run. And from there, it was just checking off those boxes and making sure that I was going through my processes and doing everything correctly. And, you know, that could have ended up with five people shadowing me the entire day, or it could have ended up the way it did this past Sunday, where it was just me off the front.
Well, and you led for over 3 hours of the World Championship, which is pretty cool. And what I love is you put yourself in a position where Javier Gomez had to run a 110 to beat you. I mean, you ran 116 for a half marathon off the bike, which is great. And if he doesn't run a 110, if he whatever, you know, there's a difference running a 110 when you're leading. There's a difference when every single step you're thinking, okay, I've got to make up ground. People crash and burn all the time. So as you were racing, as the run's going along, were you getting a sense of how far back he was?
Yeah, I think I got my first split right around the 6K or the 4 mile mark or something, and I heard that in 4K he took about a minute out of me,
right?
In just that short amount of time, and I mean, I knew that there was a pass was possible, and for me, it was just trying to let those first few miles go. I had at least 1 mile of kind of rough running and feeling the bike a little bit, but just trying to find my stride and my rhythm and just taking it 1 mile at a time. And I really wanted to make it through that first loop still in the lead and kind of be able to say, okay, now it's all, I guess, not quite downhill, but it's more than halfway through the half marathon. And then every extra step that I'm in the lead is something extra. And like you said, you never know what could happen. Sometimes people mispaced the run, or I could have gotten a second wind or something like that. So I just wanted to keep taking the race one step at a time and keep going back to that checklist that I had created with my coach and making sure that I wasn't overrunning any of the sections or underrunning them and just finding that rhythm that was going to get me my best half marathon I could get.
So you've gone through this process where you got into the sport when you were a kid, and in 2015, you're USA Triathlon Elite National Championship for both the draft legal sprint and Olympics. In 2013, you're USA Tri-Collegiate National Champ, and then you make the Olympic team in 2016. So we see this progression. When I look at the woman's side of things, someone like Gwen Jorgensen is identified out of college as a runner, swimmer, and US teaches her how to ride the bike. She makes the Olympic team in 2012. Same Katie Safaris, identified, steeplechaser and swimmer, identified and gets into sport in 2012, makes the Olympic team in 2016. You are more along the lines of Javier Gomez, Alistair Brownlee, where you've been in this sport for a long time. It seems that that identifying people out of college works on a woman's side. Can it work for the US on the men's side? Or does somebody need to be immersed in the sport like yourself for a number of years before you didn't grow through those times?
We could have a podcast episode specifically on
I know. I thought it's pretty fascinating.
Right here.
Yeah.
And, I guess, in short, I'm always going to push for trying to look at the early generations. And so the people who are in the sport and want to stick in it,
because right.
You know for a fact that they love the sport too. And not that these other people don't, but I mean, that kind of path and coming up through the sport, I think it's kind of special to me. And I see that a lot of people who do stick with it have a lot of success, and there's just a lot of experience that goes with it too. You race a lot growing up. You might even be racing in swim races, bike races, run races, and it's those people who have a lot of racing experience and know how a race is going to play out. That I think is one of the things that can be hard to teach somebody. And the collegiate recruit program has been absolutely amazing for a few guys, and you know, for a lot of our women, and has developed some of the fastest women in the sport. And I just think that in some cases it could take maybe a little bit more development and fine tuning on some of the men's side. And it's just there's two separate types of racing. The women race a little bit different than the men do as well. And I think whenever we're grouping up together and trying to have women race the same way as men or men race the same way as women, it doesn't always play out like that. And there's more than one way to skin a cat, I guess. And I think we really need to look at all of our developmental processes, try and retain the youth and junior athletes that we have and try and hold them through college and, you know, attract new people who are coming out of college and kind of look at all of these different avenues that we have and really not say one is better than the other, but just say, hey, there's great athletes all around us. We just have to identify them and keep moving like that.
So when I look at results and I look at the WTS and ITU stuff from this year, and Edmonton, you were 22nd, and Montreal, 53rd, Hamburg, I think 36th, and then 23rd at Gold Coast, 11th at New Plymouth, and 16th at Abu Dhabi. When you jumped into Ironman 70.3 Puerto Rico and get third place and you're 10 seconds off of Andy Potts, the light bulb go on where you go, wait a second. Look at the first time out here. I'm third place.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it necessarily clicked on there. I know after this past weekend, there's definitely some sort of light bulb. It feels more more like a dream because I've been working at this ITU stuff for years with
right.
Maybe a decent result every so often, but just kind of grinding away at it. But I think that there's... I think that the 70.3 stuff and maybe even above has always kind of been more suited to my style of racing, my style as an athlete. I'm a strength-based athlete. I don't always have the fast leg speed or fast running that some of these other guys on the ITU circuit do. But it's coming along in a little way, and I've seen a lot of progress this year in my running and kind of in the past years as well. And while hard work and determination and coming to a race and hitting all the processes can help you get an amazing result, there's always that small component of luck as well. And I think some of my races this year, maybe in the ITU, like some certain situations just didn't really
sure.
pan out how I wanted them to. But that's how racing is. And sometimes with the ITU stuff, you look at guys and they have a fifth place or a seventh place or a third, and then the next race they're 40th or something because of something happening. And that's just how cutthroat it is, because, you know, even the shorter the race, the less mistakes you really can make, and small mistakes can lead to big time deficits overall. So But yeah, I've enjoyed doing a little bit of everything this year, and the 70.3 thing especially.
Yeah, well, you go from the third there, and then you national championships in St. George. We're talking Alistair Brownlee, Lionel Sanders, Sebastian Keenley, Tim Don, and then Ben Canute. Fifth place there, that's an all-star field. That's the best guys in the world. And then you follow that up by, you know, going to the Worlds in Chattanooga and getting second and leading for, you know, basically 320 of the day and really only being, what, 2 minutes off of winning, potentially winning the race. Where do you see yourself? We've got another Olympic cycle going on. So we got 2020 going to Tokyo. Is the Olympics still number one, or are you sort of hedging bets a little bit, thinking, you know what, there maybe I have more success down the line at the 70.3?
You know, Bob, I want it all.
So, good. All right, that's the way you race. I love that.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's going to be a challenging few years because, I mean, Tokyo, I feel like I still have a little something to prove in the Olympic Games after my race in Rio. I still feel like I want to be able to take that last 5K of the run and move forward, not backwards. But with the addition of the mixed team relay, I feel like I've kind of made a name for myself a little bit in that sort of racing. And I really enjoy it, and I think it's a really great section of our sport, one that I want to get a lot of traction and that I want people to watch because it's super exciting. And I think that as a U.S. team, we have an excellent shot at a medal. So to try to just let that opportunity pass up, obviously there's a lot of qualification that goes into being selected for that. And I think the date is approaching relatively soon here for to figure out what exactly we have to do. But at the same time, I think there's still opportunities for me to race some half Ironman races, to race some non-draft Olympic and some of these other interesting formats that are starting to gain some traction. And I think this year has kind of been a bit of a learning curve for how to handle this, but also in some cases a good example of being able to juggle the super sprint races and still have some really, really good mixed team relay legs while also juggling the half Ironman side of the point and having some great half races as well.
So the mixed team relay will be in the Olympics in 2020, correct?
Yes.
So, and for our listeners who don't know what that is, the mixed team relay is two guys and two gals from each country who are already there, right? They're already on the Olympic triathlon team, so it's not like they're bringing somebody else in, I'm assuming. And talk a little bit of what are the distances and how does it work?
Yeah, so I think the distances have kind of shifted a little bit. They're all right about this. They're about a 300-meter swim, I believe a 6 to 8K bike, mm-hmm. somewhere in there, and then a mile run or a 2K run it might be for the Olympics is what the official distance is. But, yeah, so each person, it goes girl, guy, and everybody does a super sprint triathlon, and super exciting, amazing, and you're correct in saying that athletes have to race both the individual Olympic distance race at the Olympics as well as the mixed team relay if your country can put together a full relay.
What's fascinating is this, when triathlon first got in the Olympics in 2000, it led off the games in Sydney. It was the first event of the games because they knew it would be great television. They could showcase the Sydney Opera House and the bridge and everything, the harbor. And the crowds were, you know, 10, 15 deep for this sport that a lot of people watching on television never heard of before. And this mixed, I've been telling people this mixed team relay is going to take it to the next level because I don't think there's anything ever designed in our sport that's better for television than mixed team relay.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I think each year in Hamburg, it kind of proves that where the day before there's some amazing crowds and people get really into it. But that next day when you're on the mixed team relay, the crowd seemed to become more compact. The course is a little bit closer together, and everybody is a little bit more in your face and going a little bit crazier, and watching people go from first to second to first to fourth and all over the place. And it makes it somewhat unpredictable, and, yeah, just a really, really fun race to watch.
So when I was looking back at some of your numbers from Rio, that was probably one of the more brutal courses. You got a lot of the courses they have on the ITU circuit are a pretty cookie cutter. A lot of turns, flats, you know, criterium type of format where you guys are accelerating out of the turns. That race had a couple of big ass hills on each lap. And I think were you pushing over 1,000 watts at one point during that ride?
Yeah, just very briefly, though. You
know, very briefly.
I think that Rio course kind of shows that the ITU is trending towards making at least some of the courses more interesting. Like this weekend in Rotterdam, I've been checking out the course and the course maps a bit, and there's some crazy technical turns here over cobblestones. And right now I'm looking out the window and the wind is kind of blowing all crazy. And I mean, just some of these other courses, I can list off Stockholm. There was the year we went up the mountain in Kitzbühel. So as long as every so often we're getting in some of those challenging races and mixing them in with some of those cookie cutter ones, it's moving in the right direction. So
when you look at your skill set, obviously you're one of the best swim guys in the sport. And did you know, because when you're doing a lot of those ITU races, the cycling has obviously improved. Alistair Brownlee, Javier Gomez, they've taken it up to another level. But did you get a sense that, gosh, I feel like my cycling, I'm not able to showcase that at these races? And were you surprised when you jumped up to 70.3 that, wow, I'm off the front here?
I think I'd say I'm surprised that with the how big of a gap that I got, especially in Chattanooga.
Yeah.
But I know Javier Gomez is an incredible cyclist. I rode with him in Montreal, and I mean he was making me hurt on the bike there. And I think a lot of the IT races, it is hard to look at a race and try and pinpoint who the best cyclist is, because there's maybe a lot more strategy going in. But I mean, from the numbers that I got in training and from what Jim was telling me, and just kind of seeing my progression throughout the year, I knew I was cycling really well, and I knew that my kind of goal watts were in a range where people would have to ride pretty hard to keep up. But I don't think that I really expected to outride a group of 7 to 10 guys, because I think they ended up, that's where a little bit of the luck kind of comes in, because they were all started looking at each other and started thinking about the half marathon at the end of the race.
Right.
And, nobody really wanted to put in the effort to try and catch me as much, because nobody wanted to be gassed for that half and miss out on a chance at the podium. So I think that was one of the things that also helped me get such a big separation.
So what has Jim Vance brought to the table for you as a coach?
There's probably like a huge list that I could go through, really, because this year has been absolutely incredible, winning Alcatraz and performing in the IT races and doing well at the non-draft and half Ironman. And it's just kind of been a big step up from what I've done in the past. But just like with all my coaches, I think he's just kind of taken the information that I've given him from the past, and he's watched me race, and he's brought a whole source of knowledge and data that he's accumulated over the years, and applied that to the training that we've been doing, and kind of looked at what I've been doing in the past and shifted it around and made sure that we were doing some strength work and speed work to complement each other. On top of that, a big theme for this year is resting and just making sure to let my performance be an indication of my fitness, and not letting any sort of working out or hard work or anything like that get in the way of my racing, which I think is somewhat new for me. I've always been a really hard worker, but it's always been a little bit more challenging for me, I think, to maybe really nail a taper down or to find the right balance of stress and rest. And I think this year we've done a very, very good job at making sure that I'm well rested and at some points maybe even a little bit over rested for some of these races, because it's always easier to look at the racing and see what went wrong or where I need to improve when we know that I was completely rested and stuff like that, rather than maybe going in a little bit overdone or something like that and then scratching the head, and it just complicates things a little bit.
So is there a full Ironman in the future, or is that after 2020?
I think that's going to be quite a bit in the future. I'm enjoying short course Good. Racing, half Ironman and below quite a bit, and that's a big commitment to jump
yes,
right
is.
Up to the full. But I'm not going to rule that out. I'm more than happy to just cap my racing at about 4 hours right now, but someday I know I'll have the itch to double that and try and race for 8 hours.
So well, yeah.
I think I need to separate myself from this half Ironman a little bit. The legs are still a little sore, so.
You think?
We'll see.
Well, it's funny because you talk about a lot of your elite runners, and if you said, hey, I'm going to do 4 or 5 half marathons this year. That's a lot. Like a runner would look at that and go, okay, I'm not going to peak for 5 half marathons or 4 half marathons. You sort of as a hobby, squeezing in around your ITU races, I've done 3 world-class races. And a half marathon's a long way.
It is. It definitely is.
What do you look at when you look back on your career in terms of your best race, the race that meant the most to you?
I mean, that's a hard one. I think that at each stage in my career, I could probably pick out one race that I really enjoy. And, you know, I'm really proud of my qualifying race and my Olympic race, but I'd say it's right now Chattanooga has got to be probably my best race overall. Yeah. I executed exactly how I wanted it to, and pretty much it was one of those rare times where the focus was there the entire day too. There was never a time where I drifted off into sort of the la-la land or something where you can lose focus and let something slip, but for that 3 hours and 51 or 52 minutes, I was focused on the task at hand, and it was kind of like one of those dream races. So that to me is probably what I was most proud of, the mental aspect and being able to not necessarily race on the front, because that's how I usually race. That's kind of what I expect of myself, is to be up at the front trying to compete, but to be able to seal the deal on the run, where I think a lot of people maybe didn't expect me to hold on for that long.
Yeah, 116, there's nothing wrong. And that's not a flat course. That's a hard course.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's definitely a hilly course.
Now, did you, Tim Don, who's obviously a great runner, was back less than a minute. Did you get a sense of, did you feel him coming?
Yeah, I had a lot of time splits out on that course. People telling me who was coming up, and I kept getting time splits back to the next group. So I knew it was Tim. I knew Sam Appleton was there.
Yeah.
I knew Keenlay was coming up. So for me, one of the biggest things I was worried about is they were running in a group kind of working together. And
yep.
If that entire group caught me, that would have been...
All of a sudden you're off the podium after leading all day.
Yeah, exactly. So I was kind of starting to count down the miles toward the end. I mean, I tried to key off Gomez a little bit and get through the flat sections. And then I knew if I could make it to kind of the top of the last big hill, it was pretty much like downhill and then over the bridge and into the finish. So that's about a mile and a half or so out from the finish line. I'd say maybe 2 miles. And I knew if I could make it there, they would have to take some big time out of me to get in, to beat me. So, I was just trying to keep that gap as steady as I could, because I would not have liked to have to either pick that up or try and go in for a sprint finish. But I was definitely aware of them coming up.
So the week before this race, you're in San Diego doing sort of a casual race called the Dirt Dog Series. This four-mile little cross-country, probably one of the more brutal four-milers anybody will ever run. Did you have a sense of how tough that course was? And you ended up, I think, finishing fourth there. And going, I think you went, the first mile was like 4:50. When you go out there and you're running, these guys are runners. These are hardcore runners, and you're a try guy. What do you get from an experience like that?
I think doing run races is probably something that I like to do a little bit more of, just to get comfortable racing people on the run. It's something that maybe I don't have as much experience in, as opposed to the swimming and biking portions. But that cross-country race was kind of a big confidence boost after a big block of training and just before taper, and to hang with runners on a course like that was a lot of fun and just really good for the confidence. And I don't think I didn't quite know what to expect with that course. Jim had told me that it was hard, and that we were running on grass and trails and it was hilly. When I got there in the morning and saw the hills, I was like, oh man, what did I get myself into? This is going to be tough. And, but it was a good experience. This year too, I wanted to put myself in some situations and go and race, in some races, triathlons, run races, whatever, that kind of took me out of my comfort zone so that I could grow and try and build up my weaknesses and turn them into strengths. And that's kind of what the idea was a bit behind the cross-country race too.
So Major League Triathlon, you've been a supporter from the very beginning, really cool, fast racing. And talk a little bit about the Major League Triathlon and why that's important to you.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those new series that I'm hoping and that I believe is here to stay, because it's unique. It's taking that mixed team team aspect and turning it into a series. And it's pulled in actually quite a few big names, like over the past couple of years. And I mean, people from Cam Dye, Paula Finley, like Lauren Goss.
Yep.
We've had Taylor Spivey. We've had a bunch of people come in there and race those races. And it's just a whole lot of fun. I mean, I really have nothing bad to say, especially about a group of people who want to take one of my favorite formats of racing and turn it into an entire series and give me more opportunities to practice this unique format. And I think they're doing a great job. They're attracting sponsors. They're attracting some big cities and getting interest from a lot of different places to hold the race. And I think they've learned quite a bit from their first year and now their second year as a series. And I'm really looking forward to continuing on with the series and hopefully lending my expertise into how to take it to the next step or something like that. And I've been a supporter from the beginning, and I think I'll be a supporter for as long as I can be in this sport, because it's series like this too that I think help grow triathlon. And I'm just excited for people to keep following it and to keep watching it.
So Rotterdam this weekend, World Championships. Talk a little bit about, does this course, like you talk about, you look out the window and it's windy. Most people would be like, oh no, it's windy. I'm sure you're more like, look at conditions, bring it on. Sort of the you like it being hilly and hard and having to be able to handle your bike. Does this course suit you?
Yeah, I think it's one of the reasons why I'm coming to this race straight after Chattanooga. If it was a little bit different, I might just kind of take a break and recover real quick for that for the next race, because this is kind of a risky race plan overall, a kind of an aggressive postseason. But the course, I like cold, rainy, wet courses a lot of times. I've had some.
You're
of my,
Chicago
my
guy.
Best races.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah, I grew up in that, and I think this course is going to be extremely challenging. It's some pretty cold water. I think it'll be a wetsuit swim. And the bike course is just incredibly technical from what I've heard. I've only been out and about for a little bit since I just arrived yesterday morning. But, yeah, there's cobblestones, there's tight corners. The wind kind of, the city almost acts like a wind tunnel as the buildings kind of funnel the wind through everything. And some parts of the course are exposed. And, yeah, I think it's one of those courses where, I mean, there's a turn almost every few hundred meters with hardly any long straights. So it's going to be a technical course. And even though it's flat here, I think it's going to take a lot out of some people's legs, especially riding over cobbles. That's always an experience. But, yeah, we'll see how it goes. I think a lot of times we can talk about the course and how challenging a course is. But I think this year especially, I've kind of learned that a course can only do so much for somebody. It's more the people in the race and how they want to race that determines how difficult it is, whether you're talking about a super sprint, an Olympic, a 70.3, non-draft or draft legal. It's definitely the mentality of the racers, and even if it's just a couple people, that'll set the tone for the race.
Was it a little deja vu for you when I watched Javier running up during 70.3, I was flashing back to 2015 where Mola and Javier, and here you are, took a flyer off the bike there in Chicago, and you're leading that race and going for it in front of the hometown, and here comes Mario and Javier, and you know, and then here that happens again. But the nice part is you were still able to finish second this time.
Yeah, I think he took probably just under a minute out in 2.5K, so I think I'm starting to hold the gap slightly better.
Yes.
At that point, and it's too bad Chattanooga wasn't a 10K, because I would have snagged it then. But
yeah, that's true.
I at that point I wasn't doing any reminiscing. I was more trying to keep everything in check so that there was no falling apart at that point. And I knew Javi's pass was textbook. I knew exactly how he was going to do, and he's going to make it decisive. So for me, once I saw how close he was, especially kind of as that point where he passed and he got closer and closer, I knew that it was going to be a decisive move, and that there was no way he was going to want me anywhere near him. He was going to take no chances or anything. So I just tried to stay in my own mind and to run my own race and make sure that I didn't get taken out of it.
So you're one of the few guys, because you've been going back and forth between 70.3 and the ITU, who's raced an Alistair Brownlee and a Javier Gomez and a Mario Mola and also a Lionel Sanders and a Sebastian Kienle. That has to be sort of fun, racing people you've never raced before, and Andy Potts, guys like that.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. And yeah, it's different formats. It's different people who have different strengths, and different styles of racing requires a little slightly different strategies and stuff. So that was one of my goals this year, was to race different people, race on different courses, race different distances, and mix it up, since I've spent a majority of my career in the ITU circuit and kind of grinding away at that. I wanted to make sure that I was experiencing as much as I could the sport of triathlon and what it had to offer. And it's been so fun this year.
Is there a different feel when you go to an ITU race or when you go to a 70.3 race?
Yeah, definitely. They both have their different atmospheres. And I would say the ITU series, they do a spectacular job at making you feel like a professional with the blue carpet and kind of having like certain parts of the pro meeting or certain ways that they set up with the athlete lounges and stuff. And
yes,
some of the 70.3s I've enjoyed, like I, in Puerto Rico, I remember thinking walking into the transition area and racking my bike on the far end of the age group transition and sharing that, I was thrown back to some of the days that, doing some of the local triathlons or something where there was a big transition area. It was early in the morning. It the sun was starting to rise, all that sort of stuff. So it's kind of two different sides of the sport, two different approaches. And I mean, I love them both. I've enjoyed doing both of the different styles and kind of having the different atmospheres that go along with it.
The cool thing nowadays is with the 70.3 series, with I think there's 105 70.3s around the world, and with Major League Triathlon, and with the Escape 2 Alcatraz series, you know, with some money in it, there's opportunities for folks to do drafting, non-drafting, and for someone to make a living and not have to go to a full Ironman. It's actually probably a pretty good time to do what you're doing.
Yeah, no, it's been fantastic, and yeah, I think I'm super glad you mentioned the Major League Triathlon too, because I missed out on an opportunity to pat them on the back, because they're one of the best organizations so far that I've worked with for paying their professionals. Most mornings it's pretty much the morning right after the race, and I think that there's been very few races in my career who have paid me faster than them or treated us better. So yeah, it's a great sport to be in and to race all these races.
And are you doing Island House this year?
Yes, I am.
Oh, you are going to love
I'm
that.
I'm excited.
Very cool. Yeah. Mark Holowesko, Luke McKenzie, they do an amazing job. We were lucky enough to go last year. That is very, very special. Good for you. Hey, thanks so much for taking so much time, Ben. I'm so excited about everything that's happening in your career. That's a huge breakthrough race. I'm sure sponsorship-wise, more and more people are going to want to connect with a guy who's only 24 years old, has already been to the Olympics, has won Alcatraz, has been, you know, obviously, you know, third, fifth in the nationals at 70.3, and then second in the world. You're doing great stuff, and it's wonderful to watch your progression through the years.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much, Bob. I appreciate it.
All right. Ben Canute has been our guest again. This is Babbittville Radio. We are brought to you by ToughManTry.com, VeloFix, world's coolest mobile bike shop, RunCatalina.com, ATV Swim Spas, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. And of course, check us out on Babbittville or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here.